Federal Prosecutor Robert Mueller is scheduled to go before the Senate Judiciary Committee next week. The committee will try to determine whether Mueller is qualified to become the next director of the FBI. The new director will run a legendary law enforcement agency that lately has suffered repeated blows to its public image. For many people, both the legend and the problems began with J. Edgar Hoover, who ran the agency for 48 years. NPR's Barbara Bradley has a profile.
J. Edgar Hoover was only 29 years old when he was asked to take charge of the Bureau of Investigation, as it was then called. He was fiercely disciplined, an agent with a law degree. Historian and author Richard Gid Power says Hoover brought the scandal-ridden Bureau into the sunshine.
When Hoover took over in 1924, the prevailing notion in the country was an FBI in crisis. And so Hoover was put in charge with a mandate, number one, to clean up the Bureau, and number two, to keep it out of trouble.
Hoover fired the older agents and filled the Bureau with lawyers and accountants. He installed the latest forensic technology. In speeches, he drove the message home. The FBI could outsmart the smartest criminals, an image the newsreels relished.
There is nothing mysterious about the manner in which the Federal Bureau of Investigation works. Its formula is a simple one. Intensive training, carefully investigated, and highly efficient personnel, plus rigid requirements in regard to conduct, intelligence, and integrity.
The 1930s saw the Depression, Prohibition, and the consequent rise of gangsters. The nation needed heroes. It needed victories. Hoover gave them both.
The decade's most famous public enemy was John Dillinger, and Hoover was determined to get him.
Regardless of his subterfuges, his squirming, his twisting and slimy wriggling, he cannot escape the one inexorable rule of law enforcement. You can't get away with it.
He was the best toe dancer in Washington, D.C., insofar as public relations are concerned.
Kartha Deek Deloche was a deputy director at the FBI, working closely with Hoover for many years. He says Hoover used the long reach of the FBI to captivate the nation.
The apprehension of big-time criminals and the fact that it was necessary to kill several big-time criminals, such as Dillinger, Pretty Boy Floyd, Babyface Nelson, Ma Barker and her crew, and others like that, rose to the needs of the public, and as a result, they captured the imagination of the public, and the investigative process on a federal level became a mystique.
Hoover himself became a cultural icon, the personification of truth and justice against the forces of evil. The Boy Scouts gave him an award. The Lone Ranger gave him a silver bullet. Shirley Temple gave him a kiss. On Sunday evenings, families crowded around the radio to hear FBI dramas. Later, it was a television show, The FBI, with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. When the movie, The FBI Story, was made in 1959, Jimmy Stewart just repeated what everyone knew. The FBI was invincible.
It took years to build up the FBI, to train it and retrain it, to staff it with lawyers, accountants, scientists, all working together. So when Jack Graham took on the modern FBI, he took on too much and too many. He bargained badly.
As Hoover's fame grew, President Franklin D. Roosevelt asked the FBI to investigate national security threats. With gusto, Hoover investigated Nazi sympathizers and later communists. Historian Richard Powers says Hoover fed information to Senator Joseph McCarthy. Hoover wanted to expose the communist threat even when the FBI could not make a criminal case.
He did play ball with McCarthy, but McCarthy was so irresponsible that when Hoover was finally faced with a decision, do I continue to back McCarthy, even though I know he's out on a limb that's going to be sawn off, or do I save the FBI? He betrayed McCarthy.
In fact, Hoover had a prickly relationship with many politicians. He had files on anyone who attracted his attention. Journalist Ronald Kessler authored a book about the FBI.
He would have his agents go to members of Congress and say, by the way, we understand that you had a little problem with a prostitute last night and a traffic accident. Of course, we won't say anything about it. Well, that's all that was necessary for the congressman to realize that Hoover had the goods on him and that he better do what Hoover wanted.
What Hoover wanted was a larger budget and more power to investigate. Hoover also kept files on celebrities like Norman Mailer and Carl Sandburg, Frank Sinatra, and John Lennon. Hoover's files gave him a certain job security. For example, Hoover told John F. Kennedy he knew about Kennedy's affair with Judith Exner, a woman with ties to mafia figures. Kennedy ended the affair, and Hoover kept his job. Ron Ostro, a reporter for the Los Angeles Times, says Hoover kept his hold on power even when he passed retirement age.
Lyndon Johnson's famous quote, he'd rather have someone inside the tent urinating out rather than someone the opposite. Nobody challenged him. And in fact, Johnson gave him a lifetime appointment.
By the 1960s, Hoover was loathed by the left, adored by the right. While the American people were rallying for civil rights, Hoover's attention was elsewhere. He was still targeting communists. Here he is in 1962.
The communists desire to destroy our cherished liberties and establish a dictatorship. They are working to make this nation part of a world communist empire.
Indeed, in his zeal to fight subversives, Hoover ordered covert break-ins, illegal wiretaps, and warrantless searches. At the same time, critics said he failed to protect citizens who were truly in danger, that is, blacks and civil rights activists in the South.
The three civil rights workers who disappeared in Mississippi last Sunday night still have not been heard from. There is little hope that they are still alive.
Historians say it took the kidnapping of three voting rights activists in 1964 for the FBI to become engaged. Soon after, a public dispute flared up between the icon of the right, Hoover, and the icon of the left, Martin Luther King. King claimed the FBI agents in the South were Southern-born and unwilling to investigate their friends. In fact, the agents were mostly born in the North. Hoover exploded. In November of 1964, Hoover gave an interview to a group of 20 women journalists. He called King, quote, the most notorious liar in the country. Deputy Director Deke Deloche was there. Deloche says he kept passing Hoover notes to put that comment off the record.
When I passed him the third note, he said, Deloche is telling me to keep this off the record, but you may use it. And with that, the women tore up from the table and rushed to the telephones. One of them almost pulled a telephone off the wall.
The attack on King marked a turning point in how the public perceived its FBI director. And yet, even in Hoover's waning days, journalist Ron Ostro says the press treated him with kid gloves.
It was incredible. And he was seen in public, you know, at the earlier years at the racetrack. What FBI director goes to the racetrack? I mean, well, come on. There was no criticism. And, you know, nobody did anything. Nobody wrote anything. It's incredible.
Today, journalists would look into Hoover's gambling or possible ties to the mafia. Indeed, journalists like Ronald Kessler say that Hoover, for all his bravado, diverted the FBI from its core mission to tackle powerful groups like organized crime.
That, I think, was because he was afraid to take on powerful interests, whether they were mafia or Congress, that might unseat him.
Hoover kept his job until his death in 1972. Only during his final year did the extent of his abuses emerge. Now it seems his abuses overshadow his accomplishment, how he turned a bungling Bureau of Investigation into the most respected law enforcement agency in the world. Barbara Bradley, NPR News, Washington.